It's good to see each of you here this evening, and appreciate your contribution through prayer and your presence. And I thought on the way to church this evening that do I want to ask people to move up if they're scattered all over the audience? And I've seen an improvement, I must say that, and I thank you for considering the importance of being together to sing and to worship and to have more of an atmosphere of unity. I've chosen the topic this evening, learning from God's creation. I'd like to give you three quotes, and I want you in your mind to determine who wrote each of these. Little quiz. And then we'll go back over and score your work that you have done mentally. The first quote is as follows. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Who wrote those words? The second, for the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Who wrote that? And then thirdly, but ask now the beasts, and they shall teach thee, and the fowls of the air, and they shall tell thee, or speak to the earth, and it shall teach thee, and the fishes of the sea shall declare unto thee. Who knoweth not in all these things that the hand of the Lord hath wrought this? Okay, let's go back and score the work. Psalm 19 is the first quote. Who wrote it? Anyone? David, okay, if you thought David, you are correct. The second is credited to whom? The Apostle Paul, found in Romans 1. Our Sunday school lesson recently should have been a help there. And then the third one. I won't tell you where that's found. That would be a giveaway. Who wrote that? Job? Is that what I heard? That's correct. Found in Job chapter 12. We've chosen to look specifically at Proverbs chapter 30 this evening, the last half. And there are sets, as you have noticed, probably as Tom read this, of number progressions from three to four things. And most likely this is a literary device to aid memory, much like David in Psalm 119 uses 22 sets of eight verses, with each verse beginning, or each verse within the set beginning with a different letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So here in Proverbs 30, there are five major divisions of four things, and this forms a natural outline which I plan to use for the message this evening. What I share are some lessons that I see. There are others, I'm sure. Scripture is of no private interpretation, and the Proverbs are packed full of insight and wisdom, waiting to be unearthed, thereby yielding treasures of wisdom untold. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 15 is the first set. The horse leech hath two daughters crying, give, give. There are three things that are never satisfied. Yea, four things say not, it is enough. Within this section, we have chosen to entitle it Insatiable Appetites. And I will go over these later again as we cover each section. The lesson there is destruction in addiction to selfish desires. The second section, beginning in Proverbs 30:18, there be three things which are too wonderful for me, yea, four which I know not. I've chosen to entitle this section Amazing Observations. And the lesson is there is a progression in the path of sin that is hard to understand. The third set, beginning in verse 21, there for three things the earth is disquieted, and for four which it cannot bear. The title of this, Disturbing Combinations. In the lesson, there is a reaction to that which defies proper conduct. The fourth section begins in verse 24. There be four things which are little upon the earth, but they are exceeding wise. I've chosen to entitle this Little But Mighty. The lesson, despite our human weakness, there is great reward in following God's design. And then the fifth section, beginning in verse 29, there be three things which go well, yea, four are comely in going. And I've chosen this to entitle this Unstoppable Forces. The lesson, there are inevitable cause and effect relationships to life's choices. Let's look at the first section, beginning in verse 15. The writer Agar introduces this by telling about the leech. It has two daughters, and those two daughters cry, "Give, give." And then he goes on to say, there are three things that are never satisfied. Yea, four things. Say not, it is enough. The grave, the barren womb, the earth that is not filled with water, and the fire that saith not, it is enough. And then we want to look at how that's related to the vultures. Insatiable appetites. There is destruction in addiction to selfish desires. There's a curious progression here from a single leech to its two daughters to three things to four things, further illustrating the point that greed is never satisfied, though it continually increases. Many leeches grow a sucker at each end of their body. Agar most likely was an avid student of nature, and these two suckers are probably the greedy daughters he refers to. Both suck blood. So the parasitic creature can do its job twice as quickly. The leech attaches itself to its host or victim, then mindlessly sucks in blood until it drops off under its own bloated weight. It can never get enough. Its appetite is never satisfied. In the medical field, leeches are used to reduce inflammation due to fluid buildup at the location of an incision or an operation or injury. And the doctors actually order them, allow them to attach. They will literally gouge themselves with bodily fluids, which is the purpose, until they no longer can remain attached and they drop off the body. In fact, my cousin went in the hospital, had leeches attached to him. I think he probably was unaware of it. And when visitors were in one time, he said, "Something just fell off my face." There was a leech that had gouged itself with fluid. A leech is an example of people with insatiable appetites for that which is forbidden by God, or only allowed in moderation. The writer then gives four more illustrations. The first is the grave. The word for grave is Sheol in the Hebrew and refers to the unseen afterworld. And so does the Greek word Hades in the New Testament. It is sometimes used in reference to the place of the dead. It is not full. It waits for more. That is, until the last enemy, death, is destroyed. We read in Proverbs 27:20, the word hell there is used, but it's the same Greek word, Sheol. Sheol and destruction are never full. So the eyes of man are never satisfied. We could put in there addictions. The second insatiable thing is a barren womb, especially among the Hebrews. Barrenness was considered a reproach and a sign of God's disfavor. And so women constantly sought to conceive until they had at least one child. Can you think of one example? Hannah should come to mind. The thirsty earth is the third insatiable thing. In a desert land where the soil is sandy, the earth can soak up a lot of rain and water before it begins to form puddles. And fire is the fourth insatiable thing. It seems like the more it is fed, the more it grows, and the more fuel it demands. James speaks of this, for he mentions the word matter is literally a forest. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a forest a little fire kindleth. We're talking here about destruction and selfish desires. Addictions arise from a desire for the good feeling, so to speak, that's experienced by participating in that which is forbidden by God. The brain actually releases dopamine, a chemical that flows down through the body. And people are really seeking the reaction to that dopamine. And the body seeks more once it has experienced it, and more, with no ultimate satisfaction outside of a deliverance through the power of Christ. There is only one absolute high that a person can experience that is approved by God. By the way, it far exceeds the highs that are available in this world through Satan's temptations. The high that God allows is an exuberant relationship with Christ and a selfless service to Him and His kingdom. 1 Corinthians 16:15, I find interesting. It says, I beseech you, brethren, ye know the house of Stephanas, that it is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have addicted themselves to the ministry of the saints. God has created us. And if we would be smart, we would follow what He says about experiencing the greatest feeling we could ever experience. We have been created to have that dopamine released when we're with God and having a relationship with Him that exceeds all other pleasures of this world. It usually follows that someone who becomes addicted to unlawful things falls into the category of being rebellious. They have issues of rebellion. Why? Because most addictions today are open invitations to demonic spirits. And I won't get into that because that's beyond the scope of the lesson this evening. But verse 17 is a verse, the eye that mocketh at his father and despiseth to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out and the young eagles shall eat it. Why is the eye mentioned? The first thing that is tested, so to speak, by the vulture to see if there's any life left. Your eye is the last organ to lose sensitivity. And that vulture, when he lands near his next meal, wants to make sure that body is dead, and it will pick at the eye. There is destruction in addiction. What follows is rebellion. What follows is death. And the eagles, the vultures, the ravens, creatures of death, will come and pick at the eye of such a person. There's a lesson here that behooves our attention. The second section, beginning in verse 18, there be three things which are too wonderful for me, yea, four which I know not. The way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent upon a rock, the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the way of a man with a maid. Such is the way of an adulterous woman. She eateth and wipeth her mouth and saith, I have done no wickedness. Title of this is Amazing Observations. And the lesson, there is a progression in the path of sin that is hard to understand. Let's look at the eagle. How many of you have actually in nature seen an eagle soaring or flying through the air? A few of you. Actually, my first time of seeing an eagle in nature was in Maine in the early 90s. We were in a schooner, and we were circling an island, which the captain told us that, yes, there was an eagle nest there in the trees, and we might just be able to see that eagle. And sure enough, as we came up alongside that island, that eagle flew off the nest and flew around that island, soared in the air. I guess it would be an understatement to say I was excited. But then, actually having had the privilege of seeing an eagle near East Berlin was even more exciting. And even though I wasn't at home, I got excited for my children who spotted one right outside our back door. that is an American bald eagle. The second is a serpent that slithers in a flowing motion. I often was amazed at that. I haven't seen snakes too many times, but they can travel in a serpentine motion, and it just seems like they flow and without effort. The third is a ship, wind-driven with sails. It's able to turn, travel great distances. They're all explorers, God here, by way of wind. The writer here had no inclination that someday we would be traveling by spaceship to the moon and beyond. And then fourthly, the word man, here the Hebrew means a mighty man, a hero. And the word for maid is more commonly rendered virgin. Apparently it has to do with the influence and courtship that a hero has upon a young girl. Just one incident comes to mind. We were visiting the aquarium in Baltimore, and there were young ladies there giving direction as we were going to be seated. And as I sat down, I noticed this sailor come in, all dressed in uniform, or some military man, I'm not sure at this point exactly. But I noticed that young lady standing there, her countenance changed, and she, apparently single, could have been easily influenced by this, in her mind, hero. Now, these are amazing observations, but there is a progression here. And the writer concludes that with the example of an adulterous woman. As mysterious as those things in nature are, the ways of sin in its working is just as mysterious. For example, an adulterous woman acts like she has done no wrong. She becomes desensitized to evil. It all begins with an open door to temptation, and once the enemy has the stronghold, he is in the position to influence, constrict, and attack, and desensitize the conscience so that the person thinks they are doing no wrong. The third section, found in Proverbs 30, verse 21, beginning there, for three things the earth is disquieted, and for four things which it cannot bear, for a servant when he reigneth, and a fool when he is filled with meat, for an odious woman when she is married, and a handmaid that is heir to her mistress. This section is entitled Disturbing Combinations. The lesson, there is a reaction to that which defies proper conduct. These things are intolerable because they are all contrary to good order in society. Any person who is out of his place and acting contrary to orderliness in society will cause, most often, irritation in others. God is a God of order, and any disorderliness is not from Him. A servant, especially slaves or servants in those days, were not generally trained or capable of ruling. Not having the advantages of the necessary training, they, if came into power, would have the tendency to misuse that power and to lord over those who were under their authority. The other example, secondly, were fools. A fool, to live in luxury and satisfaction, is a disturbing combination. Thirdly, an odious woman is mentioned. Odious has to do with hatefulness. which she conceals before marriage, but then reveals it and her true character after marriage. Fourthly, likewise, a former maidservant who has become heir to her mistress may make herself unbearable to those about her. Who did that? How about Hagar? She was a former maidservant who became heir to her mistress. The fourth section begins in verse 24. There are before things which are little upon the earth, but they are exceeding wise. The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their meat in the summer. The conies are but a feeble folk, yet they make their houses in the rocks. The locusts have no king, yet go they forth, all of them, by bands. The spider taketh hold with her hands and is in king's palaces. We entitle this Little But Mighty. The lesson, there is great reward in following God's design, despite our human weakness. Let's look at the ant. The smallest ant is a Pharaoh's ant, no bigger than the dot of the eye on the printed page. You could take your thumb and with a little bit of pressure, just wipe that ant out of existence. They're weak. Even a large ant is no match for your shoe. Yet when ants work together, they do mighty things. A large colony over the course of the summer can gather and carry 2.5 tons of food. We have a time coming when no man can work. Now, I like to learn preparation from the ant. We have to prepare for the time when we are not going to be able to work, just like the ant has to prepare for the winter when it cannot work. The coney, kind of a defenseless animal, looks somewhat like a rabbit, short ears. It's defenseless. The armadillo has amazing armor. The skunk has an aromatic arsenal. The porcupine has spiny penetrators. The coney doesn't have a defense system. So where does it dwell? It dwells among the rugged places of the cliffs and rocks, and it teaches fortification. My strength is made perfect in weakness. We have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us. Flee to the rock, Christ Jesus. The locust has no king or leader, yet it advances in ranks. It can destroy a landscape in a matter of a day. The foliage from trees disappears. The short-horned grasshopper, although small, has unified efforts that enable it to accomplish great things. Cooperation is the lesson it teaches. You know, there is power in Christian love and unity. The spider is the fourth creature from nature mentioned here. Some Bible scholars think it refers to the lizard, but the lesson applies to both. We're going to consider the spider. Spiders have three kinds of silk glands, some five, each for a special purpose designed by the Creator. Zeal for work takes the spider into king's palaces, places of dignity and honor. What's the lesson? Aspiration. Even though small, they have the privilege of dwelling in the palaces all across the world. We're rather small, aren't we, as individual believers? But listen, we too have the privilege of dwelling in the palace of a king. Not just any king, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. The fifth section, beginning in verse 29. There be three things which go well, yea, four are comely in going. A lion, which is strongest among beasts, and turneth not away for any. A greyhound, and a he-goat also, and a king, against whom there is no rising up. If thou hast done foolishly in lifting up thyself, or if thou hast thought evil, lay thine hand upon thy mouth. Surely the churning of milk bringeth forth butter, and the wringing of the nose bringeth forth blood. So the forcing of wrath bringeth forth strife. We've entitled this section Unstoppable Forces. And the lesson, there are inevitable cause and effect relationships to life's choices. What we reap, we will sow. What we sow, we will reap. And I have been involved in numerous discussions recently about situations and issues. And inevitably, the issue comes up, well, aren't they forgiven? Didn't they confess that? Aren't they trying to do better? Yes. And they are forgiven. And God blesses them. But there's a law that cannot be changed. There are consequences to sin, which will be paid regardless. Otherwise, God's words would not be true. We will reap what we sow. I'm reaping today. I'm reaping right now that which I shouldn't be, but I made choices before that fall into God's law of sowing and reaping. Unstoppable forces. Let's look at the four things here. The lion. It's probably because of this fearless, regal king of beasts and his behavior that places him in this category. Any of the cat family have a grace about their movements, but the lion, being the largest, seems to multiply this grace. Unstoppable force. There is, secondly, uncertainty to what the second animal is, whether a greyhound, a horse, or some other animal. Literally, it is one girt in the loins, which could apply to any of the animals I mentioned. The lesson is, they are majestic when they run. And they move fast. Unstoppable force. The male goats, third thing mentioned, and they are often leaders of the flock. They also have a certain majesty about them. Do you ever see male goats hitting each other, or rams be another example? The fourth, are kings, last mentioned as majestic beings, especially those who are absolute sovereigns. And it seems that their power is such that none can rise successfully against them. When they go to war, they advance with confidence and victory. Unstoppable forces. These animals and forces can advance with speed, just as the cause and effect consequences can. Consequences of wrong actions, consequences of wrong words. And then, the writer concludes with some words of advice about wrath and strife. Anytime you notice wrath in people and strife, you can be sure that it comes from the evil realm. Ultimately, they are works of the flesh. Galatians 5:20, we can read there about those. And we must never confuse striving in a wrong way with striving for the master. We all should be striving for that which is eternal. We are not to strive with men, but we are to be gentle unto all men. We are to strive for the master. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Hopefully in these lessons from God's creation, we have gleaned something this evening that we can take and use in our lives. And I would pray that each of us would desire above all else that life everlasting, the life of the Lord Jesus Christ living in us.